Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
This week on Lunchbox Envy. A quarter of the UK eats it for dinner at least once a week.
Jeff Goldblum eats his with orange juice.
And in South Korea, a limited edition green onion flavoured variety was so popular that it sold out in 2 days.
Yeah.
It's cereal! And welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Manu, and I'm here with my fellow QI elves, Jack and Alex.
Howdy.
Hello. I've never seen anyone so excited to research anything than Manu.
No.
Researching cereal. I've had sort of like minute-by-minute updates like, oh my God, I found this. Oh my God, I found this.
I love it so much. There's so much sugar in it.
So to prepare for this episode, I went to the supermarket and did what I've wanted to do my whole life, which is basically buy one of every cereal on the company credit card. So we are surrounded by cereal today. What have we got? We've got Cocoa Pops. We've got
Rice Krispies.
Rice Krispies,
cornflakes,
Shreddies, Wheatos. I've got Weetabix in the cupboard, but I just think it's so boring.
Yeah, I remember hearing someone, I thought it was you, Manny, someone who gets their Weetabix and then just like spreads butter over it and adds Marmite
that
and crunches it.
That is not me. That is 100%
what an accusation to make.
Yeah. No. I mean, it sounds.
I do a lot of weird shit, but that's not me. Are you guys like crunchy Weetabix, like with a bit of texture, or mushy Weetabix?
I think it needs to be a crunchy.
I mean, I like the contrast. So you start out with a bit crunchy and then you let it get soaked. And
But then if you leave it too much, it becomes the hardest material known to man.
Yes, if you leave it stuck to your tuffy.
And like we should build things out of it.
Porcelain.
You probably could. You know?
Well, that's part, going back to the rice episode, that's the rice mortar they used to build the Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
It's basically that, but with rice.
Well, that's the thing. Weetabix comes in its own brick form.
This is genius.
Stack Weetabix and then sparge it lightly so that it gets a bit wet.
So good.
Did we just solve the housing crisis?
I think so. Well done, guys.
It did strike me that the marketing of breakfast cereal really is a sad indictment on our priorities as we get older.
Yeah.
The kid cereal is just like so like, do this quiz and here's a maze and oh my God, it's sugary and here are these characters and it's life and it's a fun way to start the day and breakfast. And then adult cereal is just like, this might make going to the toilet a bit easier. Like, what a broad range of ways to sell essentially the same meal.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of interesting. So how do we define breakfast cereal then? Because it does come in such a wide range of ways.
Do you think all cereal should be eaten with a liquid? I think that's part of the definition of breakfast cereal. No?
Yeah, so I looked up the Oxford English Dictionary definition.
Oh, yeah.
And it says cereals, so all of these different grains, but eaten with milk.
So Jeff Goldblum is turning his cereal into something else.
Yeah.
He's breaking the rules.
I don't know what that is. Orange juice has no place.
He's Jeff Goldblum. Of course he does. He's like, eating it shirtless.
Okay, so obviously it's quite difficult to define, but I found four quite useful categories in cereal production.
Mm-hmm.
So we have flaked. Classic, if you think of your cornflakes.
Yeah,
clues in the name.
Mm-hmm. These are grains that are broken into grits, which is like a coarse grind. They're cooked, flavoured, and then smushed between rollers.
So they
get smushed at the end.
Kind of like pasta.
Yeah. Then we have puffed.
Puffed, okay.
Exploding cooked grains in a pressure chamber.
Wow.
That's what creates puffed.
Wow.
And then there's shredded. Okay. Which is pressure cooked.
And they've worked out
grain.
In the gym for so long, they got 0% body fat. Yeah.
Pressure cooked grains that they squeeze through heavy rollers and then cut into biscuits and dry. And then we have granular, which I'm still not entirely sure about. So help me if you can.
I think that's when they become all kind of knobbly. So
I think grape nuts.
Yeah,
are the perfect
I think
example.
This too. So this is like a stiff dough that's fermented. Baked, then rebroken. So this was also one of the cereals I ate dry before we started recording and immediately regretted. They are so hard.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you for free, they don't contain grapes or nuts.
No.
They
do not.
So...
Were you looking for grapes and
I'm just
nuts
like, where the fuck did that name come from?
One theory is that they I mean, they're very small and hard. So they're actually just like grape pips, which actually we're not familiar with these days because the grape, the seeded grape has been sort of bred out of our cultural supermarket offerings. Mm-hmm. But grapes traditionally have seeds and they are a little bit like grape seeds. But then the other theory is that there's a thing called grape sugar, a type of glucose, basically, and they were made with that. And then once you bake them, they have a kind of nutty flavour. So it's quite an uninteresting etymology.
I was about to say, I'm so bored.
I like
it. I apologise to anyone who listens to this podcast. It's not what you came for.
Actually, this is possibly why you come to this podcast. One of my favourite QI facts of all time is that all bran is 87% bran.
Wow.
Do I want to know what the last 13%
is? Yeah, the rest of it is sugar and barley malt extract.
I love that there are four kind of like four pillars of cereal. Four corners of the cereal box. So what was it? Sorry, puffed, flaked, shredded and granular, and nearly all cereals will be made in those.
They'll fit into those categories.
Nice.
That's how I am. It sounds like a dating app sort of way to filter out your potential matches. Puffed, flaked, shredded or granular.
The really fit ones, the ones you don't turn off, the ones who are really pedantic about everything.
It is time for our first lunchbox, and that is you, Alex.
Today, I have brought...
What are you doing?
A bowl of colonial cereal.
Colonial cereal.
Literally, popcorn and milk.
Wow. I suppose that is just cereal, isn't it? In a different form.
It's true, yeah, actually, yeah. So this dates back to early colonial America, where popcorn was sometimes eaten as a breakfast cereal.
Oh,
and
wow.
I first read that, I thought, that sounds ridiculous. Did Mrs. Beaton invent this? But actually, it, like you say, it kind of makes perfect sense when you think about it.
Oh, why did he use salted popcorn?
No, is it salted popcorn?
I'm joking.
I thought it was sweet, oh thank God.
It is sweet.
Is it mushy?
Yeah.
You know what? It tastes exactly like cereal. It's really good.
It's very mushy, actually.
Mm, yummy.
So this is, people in the 18th and 19th centuries put milk or sometimes cream over popped corn, sweetened it with sugar, so we should add some sugar.
That's amazing.
So I thought this would get us into the history of cereal and where it all came from. Because popcorn was widely grown by the Native American population.
Popcorn was grown? You mean corn?
Corn, yes. Popcorn was made. So corn was grown and then
popped. From the popcorn trees. Exactly.
And then it was adopted by the settlers. Mm. And it was cheap and it was easy to make.
Indigenous Americans made a version of cereal from corn. It was known as hominy. Mm-hmm. I think that's the European word for it. Mm. But hominy is dried corn that goes through a process called nixtamalization.
Oh, such a good
word.
Did you
look this one up? So the Central Americans would nixtamalize their corn.
What does that mean? Is this the fifth process of cereal?
It's kind of fermentation, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of. You add an alkali, which is usually made from wood ash, and it basically removes the husk and the germ, and then you dry it out, and it basically makes what looks like sort of dried husks of corn. Mm-hmm. And they're bleached, I think. A lot of the time they look white.
Oh, wow.
And it's a subsection of grits, as you mentioned before. Grits are a... sort of ground up form of corn. It's basically sort of corn flour, but not quite as well ground.
Yeah.
So it's kind of gritty, I suppose. And then you still eat that in America. You have grits, actually in porridge form mostly, grits and gravy and biscuits and the like in the South. I remember having grits and shrimp and grits.
Yeah.
That's like prawns for breakfast, which I found odd, yeah.
So when did like modern commercial breakfast cereal start?
So you have like the kind of old school proto cereal. When I think of modern cereal, breakfast cereal, one name that keeps popping up is James Caleb Jackson.
Yes.
Who is pre-Kellogg. Actually, he was friends with Kellogg.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
They all knew each other. It was really interesting.
It was one big Christian cluster of
Christian clusters is my favourite cereal.
Cross shaped, aren't they? Yeah.
Really painful to eat. Start off. So this was the first big dog in cereal.
Oh yeah.
James Caleb Jackson.
Just in the 1800s, this group of Christian dudes. It's called a medical sanitarium, but you can go there for all sorts of ailments. It's basically like a spa retreat.
Yeah.
In New York, where people went just to heal and look after themselves.
Upstate New York. It was in the countryside, right? And it was at the time he was so into hydrotherapy because I think he got cured by going and dipping in some like magic waters, and he was cured. by it. So he was a big fan of, like, you know, healthy water and steam baths and cold plunges and the like. So he set up a successful business.
So he was the first to make something called granular.
Yes.
Which I've got the recipe for. It's quite simple. So you mix wheat bread flour into a dough and then you roll it 3/4 of an inch thick. Then you bake it and then you break those up and then you bake it again. Sounds very much like hardtack. And then...
yeah, it's giving tack.
and then you put that, like, resulting dough into a grinder. And they're quite pebbly and they're very similar to grape nuts.
Yeah, they're like big grape nuts. Except I saw that you, like, this was before... I mean, this is the start of the journey, but...
It's the most cereal ever.
Yeah, like, you basically you have to soak it overnight. So it wasn't that convenient, really. It was kind of like overnight oats.
Because it was so hard, you actually had to like
big lumps as well. So.
And this is granular, G-R-A-N-U-L-A.
Yes. And then John Harvey Kellogg, who was a mate of his and had his own sanitarium, he basically ripped it off and he got sued by James Caleb Jackson because he'd copied granular. So he changed the name to granola. Changed the U to an O.
What a troll.
I know. So the reason all these nutritionists wanted to create boring breakfast cereal. Basically, the breakfast cereal of Americans before then was basically incredibly rich and full of saturated fat. It was bacon, eggs, sausages, often like whole steaks and stuff. Like, people would just eat meat for breakfast. And so this was obviously, you know,
this is a salad, basically.
Going full circle, because now the health freaks are like, you should have your breakfast steak. You should have protein. Like, protein is bad.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
But the things that Kellogg thought his cereal would be able to cure, famously bonkers.
Yeah.
So he was like, oh, guys, this is going to sort out your digestive system and also stop you from masturbating all of the time.
Yeah.
Which he thought was a good thing.
He hated masturbation. Because
they were quite puritanical, weren't they? Both so, Jackson and Kellogg.
Yeah, a big no-no. So it was called onanism. So some of the things that Kellogg thought that onanism could cause. So general disability. I don't know what that is.
Who's that?
Captain Crunch's friend.
consumption, like symptoms, premature
again, quite vague. Yeah.
Development, sudden changes in disposition, but it's a really long list. Love of solitude, bashfulness, unnatural boldness, which is the exact opposite thing.
So these were all things that it was supposed to cure.
These were all things that were supposed to be caused by masturbation.
Oh.
That cereal would cure. Unnatural gait, bad posture in bed, lack of breast development in females, capricious appetite, use of tobacco, unnatural paleness, acne, bedwetting, and the use of obscene words and phrases.
Wow.
That's a very small section of that list.
It's kind of like early incel culture. Doesn't it feel like that sort of saying? These are all these things which are problems in my life, and sex is the cause of all of it.
What, John Harvey Kellogg never consummated his marriage? He fostered 42 children, though.
What?
So, yeah, he wanted to be a father, but he didn't ever want to have sex.
Oh, that's rough. So it was actually John Kellogg's brother, Will, the one that pushed the company into the forefront.
He was a marketing genius.
Super, super marketing genius. And he's the one that helped turn Kellogg's into the global, like, cereal heavyweight it is today. But it might all have been invented by a woman.
Oh,
classic.
So there's a really good article on Gastro Obscura by Sarah Laskow, who's really, really gone into the sources around cereal making at the time in this community of really hardcore Christians. And she's found one of the earliest mentions of this kind of cereal was actually from Lucretia Jackson, Caleb Jackson's wife.
Wow.
So she wrote about making rust grain that was ground up and served with milk in her 1867 cookbook.
Okay.
And the company, Caleb's company, didn't start selling cereal until 1876, which is almost 10 years later. And she was known as like the big matriarch head of the household in Caleb's house.
And I can say also, like, cooking was one of the only things that women were allowed to do back then. So it's mm-hmm. kind of likely.
I mean, he also had like a female business partner. So in this okay. community, women had like a pretty
okay.
interesting role.
That's because they weren't allowed to wank.
Yeah. So they had to do something. They've got to do something. So yeah, cereal. Wow. It might be.
Shout out to Lucrecia Jackson. We should add her to our pantheon of top female chefs. Nice. I think it's been mentioned on QI before how there are very few female cereal mascots. Yeah, certainly no like drawn characters or anything.
Yeah.
But I have found one, I think, and that is Maria Rasputina.
Oh, great name.
Yeah. Great. Is she related to Rasputin?
She is. She's the daughter of Rasputin.
No way.
Yeah. So she was kind of wild, I think.
Yeah, we need a biopic.
So she lived from 1898 to 1977. So, okay. You know, lived right up to the
70s. Yeah, and also covers quite a lot of technological change.
Really does. Yeah. That was a good time to live across, actually. So after the fall of the Romanovs, she emigrated to France and then ended up in America, where she lived a very eccentric life. She was a cabaret performer. She was a lion tamer in a circus. And she, I think she was briefly, like, you know, a bit of a public figure and kind of famous. She had a famous dad. She was a Nepo baby. She yeah. was, but like,
okay,
she was the Paris Hilton of her time, I think. And she, at one point, ended up on the box of Wheaties. So it was like...
Along
with other people called the Ringling Brothers, who I think were circus performers, selling the cereal as the Breakfast of Champions.
Yeah,
it's a win that so early on in cereal's history they cracked the idea of let's make the boxes interesting because they're saying, we've never done that with, like, never seen anything interesting on like the shampoo bottles, even though everyone reads them on the toilet. Like, why are there no more interesting things on those?
Yeah, Luro wrappers or something. Yeah,
ooh,
like a sexy drawing.
If you guys could design your own personal cereal box, like, what would be on it?
I would have a cereal publication.
Oh, yes.
It would be quite cool to have a serialized novel.
Yeah, like Dickens.
So that you get a chapter, then you buy next week.
Good idea.
That is, I actually read that Grape Nuts sponsored the 1933 Admiral Byrd expedition to the Antarctic. They actually sort of publicized the expedition by putting snippets of the map of the expedition route at the top of each box. So you had to collect like all six of them, which is kind of your idea.
All right, it is time for our second lunchbox. And today that's you, Jack.
Yeah, so I have brought a magnet with me.
Well done.
Oh.
It's inedible, but because breakfast cereals start out as just grain, really, and maybe some water, and then they get baked, they're quite nutritionally devoid. You have to add in vitamins and enrich them. Mm. So you're still getting some benefit.
Fortification.
Like with breads and one of the things they fortify it with is iron.
Yeah.
And there's some cereals have enough iron in that they will react to a magnetic field.
You can pick it up with a magnet.
No way.
Well, you need quite a strong magnet to pick any cereal up, but with a sort of regular, you know, outside of a laboratory magnet, you can move them around. So what I've done is I've got a shallow bowl of water. I've made them all quite small, so I've had to grind the cornflakes just to make the visual effect. I'm going to see.
So some of the particles are like floating on the water.
Yeah, yeah, which just helps.
And now Jack is moving the magnet towards them. Oh, look, they're going away from the magnet.
Wow. It works.
So good.
That's amazing.
I'll see if I can pick one up, though. I don't think it'll work.
Okay, so I think that was just stuck to the magnet because it's wet.
Yeah.
And that's actually something that's a different effect. That's something called the Cheerios effect.
Oh, is it?
Which is, the effect where the phenomenon where breakfast cereal clumps together and sticks to the side of bowls.
Because of surface tension.
Yeah.
While we're on effects, have you heard of the muesli effect?
No, what's that?
It's if you notice when you buy muesli, because it's a bit of a mix, if it's muesli with nuts and fruit, all the nuts end up at the top. It's called granular convection, if you're being a nerd about it.
Okay, but
it's
a great name for breakfast cereal. Yeah, I do that in the morning.
Well, granular, that was the name of the first cereal.
Yeah.
It's also known as the Brazil nut effect. Mm-hmm. Brazil nuts are usually the least dense particle. Mm-hmm. And so with enough shaking, they'll always rise to the top.
Mm.
And then the most dense things sink to the bottom.
Is there like a practical use for this now that we know that it happens? Queen sorting or something?
I think, I've seen a sort of how this works where you do it on like an industrial scale with things like recycling.
If you commit the cardinal sin, like I do, and sometimes steal the best bits out of the muesli, it's very useful if they're all at the top.
Yeah.
Are you like a person or are you just a mouse? Like, like people who you live with just find that you've gone through the muesli and eaten the fruit.
No. Maybe.
So, there is metal in your breakfast cereal, but it's all at safe levels and we need iron to survive because it's in our blood cells. Mm-hmm. So don't panic. It's not going to like...
It's good metal. It's friendly
exactly,
metal.
Exactly, exactly. Mm. But yeah, I had a look around and most... I found the hemochromatosis website.
For the layperson, what?
Hemochromatosis is an illness. I think it's actually in my family where you can't process iron as well as other people. Uh-huh. So you're at risk of iron buildup. The cure is actually to donate blood, yeah. Even if you don't like donate the actual like supercharged iron yeah. blood, mm. the way to get rid of it is basically bloodletting. So oh. if you sort of donate a pint of blood, they can throw it away and then the new blood you create is like that's less, more dilute. Yeah.
Like bloodletting actually works for that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
a thing. That's anyway. Also, you'd be very vulnerable to Magneto.
True. But anyway, the Hemochromatosis website mm-hmm. listed a few UK brands and the highest iron content is in Weta Flakes, which is 6.9 grams. Per serving, mm-hmm. but I did find grape nuts contain 13 grams of iron per Ooh. Serving.
Wow!
Which is why I've used them for this experiment.
So good.
I was looking up some other scientific principles behind cereal, and I found a study from 2004 by two guys, Massimiliano Zampini and Manu. Contain yourself, your crush, Charles Spence.
No way!
Yeah, wow!
And this was a study into basically food crunchiness. So they did this on crisps,
yeah.
But this applies to cereal as well. Mm. They used microphones and sensors to record what are called fracture events when you bite into something. Crunchy.
Ooh, nice.
And you measure how physically crispy it is and also what the sound is. And they managed to find that in order for something to seem as fresh as possible, it should have a crunch of around 2 to 20 kilohertz. So quite high crunch. So if you have a breakfast cereal with quite a high sounding crunch, then you'll perceive it as being really quite fresh.
Yeah, well, I mean, just on the placebo effect. Did you ever see, because I love this guy, he's called Rory Sutherland. He came on the QI radio show Museum of Curiosity about 15 years ago. Yeah. He's a marketing expert and he's the head of Ogilvy. I think they're a marketing consultancy. He donated to the Museum of Curiosity a diamond shreddy. Because he discovered...
Oh, I remember this.
Do you remember? Yeah.
Just to say what shreddies are. Oh, yeah, shreddies are the kind of... They look like little pillows. And
yes.
They're
a lattice, a square mm-hmm. lattice
yeah.
of perpendicular threads of presumably wheat.
That's what they say on the adverts. The kids are like, square lattice of perpendicular wheat.
But yeah, so shreddies are essentially just squares of wheat. But in 2009, Nestle, who makes the shreddies, they launched in Canada a campaign... that was basically diamond shreddies. And on the box, they just changed the...
Wait a minute.
They just changed the sort of...
The picture was just...
The picture
square.
Was a square shreddy, and then they turned it 45 degrees to make it a diamond shape.
Genius.
And they actually did market research with members of the public. They were very seriously, earnestly saying, okay, here are the regular shreddies, and then these are new diamond shreddies. And they would get them out of the packet and then, like, hold them up slightly different.
No.
And then the members of the public were looking quite confused because they filmed it all as part of their... sort of guerrilla campaign. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of them, because of the sort of pressure of a man in a lab coat asking you to give your honest feedback and the placebo effect, people were genuinely saying, oh yeah, they taste different. They're a bit nicer.
So diamondy.
Yeah. Shreddies did have a tiny little boost to sales in Canada after this campaign,
so
which is
good.
Amazing because they just hadn't changed the product at all. They'd obviously just changed the branding. And then a short while later, there was backlash from some of the more conservative, you know, Canadian shreddy eaters. Mm-hmm. So they made a special 50-50 combo pack, which is exactly 50% diamonds and 50% regular squares.
On appearance and sales and kind of things like this, have you heard of a planogram?
No, I haven't.
I thought you might have done, Jack, because actually I got this fact from one of your friends at a party.
Oh, is it? Okay, I think I've got it. Is it the one who works at Kellogg's?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, wow.
When I found out, I immediately like cornered her for half an hour and just talked about colleagues. And she told me all about her. A part of her job is product producers working with supermarkets. Uh-huh. She told me about planograms, which are these, it's a visual shelf plan that shows exactly where all the products go in shops. So
in
like, as you might expect, they're not just like randomly made tidy by the person who works there today. Yeah. Like a lot of work and thought goes into where is everything in a supermarket? Like how does it look? How is it presented?
Yeah.
There's always a lot of negotiation between the producers and the supermarkets as to, okay, we'll sell you this amount for this much,
but
we need you to display this like by the tills or on the corner. Negotiating and good placement in the store is a really big part of your
relationship. I don't know if it's a fact or a myth, but the most like famous aspect of this is that they're like the biggest markups at eye level.
Mm-hmm. Usually, yeah, exactly. Because so, like, how often do you grab something on a whim from the bottom shelf?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
You'll bend down to get something if you need it, or ask a tall person for something from the top shelf if you need it. But different supermarket chains, their supermarkets are physically designed differently. They've got different types of shelves that they've got from different suppliers.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, so you end up with different spaces. Mm. And actually, when you walk down the cereal aisle or any aisle, you want all of the products to look like a sort of 1950s supermarket. Everything completely neat and tidy and gleaming, and all the spaces are filled and it's all kind of full and
space,
perfect.
Yeah.
The best way to achieve that is to offer different sizes of, say, cereal boxes to fit on different supermarket shelves. So Kellogg's will make a certain size. They'll all have the same amount of, Cocoa Pops in or whatever. But if you buy all the different boxes of different supermarkets, the one from Tesco's might be a little bit taller and a little bit thinner or a little bit shorter and fatter
than
Sainsbury's, for example.
Wow.
It's amazing.
I live very close to the smallest Sainsbury's I think I've ever seen. Huh. So I'm going to buy the same sort of, I don't know, 500 gram packet of Weetabix and stuff.
I will say, not making it based on the square footage of the supermarket.
Okay, right.
Like, that branch of Sainsbury's won't have the smallest packet of anything you've ever seen. Yeah. Maybe the variety pack sizes look normal sized in your Sainsbury's.
Oh, I love it. It is time for our final lunchbox, and today that is me.
What have you got for us?
I have bought cereal milk.
Just Alex milk. Is that just milk?
Oh, but it's been infused
with
different cereals.
Oh, I see. This is the milk at the end of the cereal bowl.
Got it.
The chocolatey
exactly. The thing that's left over. So,
By the way, when I was in New York City last, you could buy.
This is exactly it. So her name is Christina Tosi. She's a James Beard award-winning pastry chef. So she's done incredibly well. She set up an eatery called Milk, which is attached to Momofuku. I don't know if you know
that. Yes, that's the one I went to.
David Chang.
Yeah.
So this was around 2008 and it went absolutely viral. Cereal Milk was so famous. She's, I think herself is quick to say she did not invent cereal milk.
Okay.
But she did develop an original recipe for this kind of cereal milk product, this specific, really indulgent kind of milk, and then it was turned into soft serve. To
And her recipe wasn't just putting cereal in milk and straining.
I was going to say, her recipe is a lot more involved than what I've done. Good. So it involves cooking cornflakes in the oven until they're like roasty and toasty, and then you steep those in milk, and you leave it to stand at room temperature for about 20 minutes, and then you strain that. And you whisk in some brown sugar and a bit of salt, and then you put it in the fridge, and that is your cereal milk. And
you can do
it's a lot.
It's like perfume making.
Exactly.
I would watch, what's that really sultry film about perfume making?
I think it's called Perfume.
Is it called Perfume?
Yeah.
That film Perfume, I would watch the sequel, Cereal Milk.
Yeah, I love it. But no, it's such a good flavor, or like kind of really malty. So I've made a variety of three.
Thank you, Manny.
Well, they're quite different colors.
Yeah, so you can guess. Which one?
Oh, we're gonna do a tasting.
Yeah, three different cereals,
and what to find out the sort of the terroir of the which cereal it came from.
Okay, exactly.
So there's sort of two whitish ones and one chocolatey one.
Such a good noise.
That's tasty.
I'm getting snap. I'm getting crackle.
So to me, that tastes like Weetabix.
I immediately know what that one is.
Oh, that's Shreddies.
I think this one's Shreddies, and I think that one is cornflakes.
Alex is bang.
Oh, that's
bang
so true. Oh,
yeah,
you're so right. You're so right.
Yeah. And then this third one is, I mean, very chocolatey. Because I don't think Cocoa Pops actually turns, controversially, don't think it turns the milk that chocolatey, okay? I was always left a little bit disappointed. Oh.
Well, I think it used to. I think they've been really...
I agree.
They've borne the brunt of reformulation. So in this country, the government, like, quite rightly wants to sort of improve our diets. And one of the ways that they're doing it is to reformulate. So the government set certain limits on the amount of sugar and salt. And so a lot of cereal companies, they can promote this as well. They're always saying like 30% less sugar.
Mm-hmm. They're not what they used to be. We may be living longer, but is life worth living with less chocolatey milk?
And that's one of the tips, again, I learned from my friend. She said that the initial mouthful, you've coated the outside in all the delicious flavoury stuff, but then that quite quickly washes off. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing really flavoursome on the inside, which is why if you leave Cocoa Pops, all the flavour comes off in the milk. But yeah, they're definitely...
I don't think this is Cocoa Pops though.
Oh, is it not?
I don't know what it is though. What is it?
Wheatos.
Nesquik.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think in America they've got way like looser regulations on sugar and stuff, so you can still get quite like exciting sugar.
I was looking for sugar puffs, which I couldn't find today, and they've been rebranded to Honey Monster puffs.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're not allowed to use the sugar. Oh,
sugar is
the woke mob.
The same with there was a cereal that was called Sugar Smacks in the US, or like Sugar Smacks.
And that's because we're not allowed to smack children anymore.
Exactly. Or sell heroin. So some cereals, like not Frosties, it's just under, but Honey Smacks and Marshmallowy Mateys are over like half sugar.
Wow, by weight.
Really, really sugar. Are there any cereals.
They're American, right?
They are American.
That's just like cake for breakfast. Like, that's terrible.
I love a breakfast cake, but yeah, it is not good for you. But we've spoken a lot about marketing and advertising. Mm. And one of the things I really miss is the cereal toy. The toy in the box.
Again, another, oh, Jesus Christ, cereals have got rubbish. Like, no toys, no sugar.
There's a really, really fantastic article by a woman called Amelia Tate, who looks at the history of cereal toys in the UK.
Okay.
And she follows these employees of a company called Logistics, who used to make millions of children toys in the early noughties in the UK. Like, they worked for years developing single toys, but also quite glamorous. So say if you think about kind of films usually had their cereal box toy as well.
And she gets to go work with the film company.
Exactly. So there's one designer called James Allerton who's still designing stuff, but he's not making toys anymore. He said he used to get flown out to LA all the time.
Stop.
Yeah, just to like work with filmmakers.
Do you reckon they have one of the director's chairs and everyone was like, he's in today, he's here.
But yeah, apparently the filmmakers were really fussy. So Spider-Man's bottom, just specifically his bottom.
Wait, let me picture it.
Apparently remodeled 16 times. What? For one of the toys.
And did Andrew Garfield, was he had to sit down into a mold like 16 times? Like, no, 10's more.
That's so hard if they are eating cereal to avoid masturbation and then it's like perfectly sculpted Spider-Man drops out into your bowl.
Actually, now I think about it.
Who was it that I read somewhere online? They're like, my job was to CGI Tom Holland's bulge out of every shot. Like, reduce the bulge. And it's...
My dad's got a friend who CGI'd Voldemort's nose off.
Really?
So, I mean, I think she's retired now, but that's sort of role.
How long did she take? Just a couple of ages.
But I think, unfortunately, Tom Holland probably wouldn't have been involved because, as we know, the toys were kind of like cut. For some reason, McDonald's did not give a shit about this push. They were like, we're going to keep doing it. But cereal with companies were more scared of the legislation.
I guess they're just powerful enough.
They were like, we're going to try. But when they were making toys, the process was so rigorous. So like I said, they'd go to all of these fancy places, but they had big teams of like qualitative and quantitative researchers, like kid tracking studies, which doesn't...
Excuse me?
I know. It's not as scary as it sounds.
He's a serial child tracker. Like, it's not what you think. I work for Kellogg's.
this sounds terrible now. They collect data on how much pocket money they got and how many kids had like televisions in their rooms to see how susceptible they'd be to TV advertising. They also had focus groups of kids, and this designer was saying they were brutal. Like, if they didn't like something, they'd rip your design to shreds. He said it was really, really horrible.
To shreddies.
Nice. But yeah, and then the actual physical restrictions of the toy were really rigorous as well, because they needed to be choke-proof, as in, what's the word? Is that right?
They couldn't be a choking hazard.
Yeah, they couldn't be a choking hazard. They needed to be
child choking to death. Is the toy okay?
They needed to be made for no more than 6p, and they had to be gender neutral or with a slight boy bias. Because, yeah, girls would happily play with boys' toys, but not the other way around. Yeah.
There's only one toy that I know as an infamous fail or success as a toy, and that was a toy whistle in 1970s boxes of Captain Crunch, or Cap'n Crunch, as I think is actually called.
Cap'n Crunch.
Who, incidentally, is not a captain.
What?
He's got three stripes on his uniform, and so for years, everyone was like, he's a commander, not a captain. And then they finally fixed it for his 60th anniversary.
Amazing. Yeah, has anyone tested Captain Birdseye?
Yeah, that's true. We should check that out, actually. Anyway, so in the 70s, 70s, you could get just a little toy whistle inside a box of Cap'n Crunch. It's just a normal whistle. The tone of whistle that it happened to emit was 2,600 hertz. And by total coincidence, the telephone system that AT&T provided around the country used an automated system. Handsets communicated with the switchboard automatically, but it used this exact tone, 2,600 hertz, to signal in on a long-distance telephone call that the line was open. Basically, it meant that if you picked up the phone and blew the whistle down, you would trick the phone into giving you a free call.
Whoa! Who worked this out?
So this was a really early example of hacking, really, before internet. Proper computers or the internet. Like, this was a hack, and it was based around technology. Yeah. And he was called John Draper. He's like one of the founding members of hacker culture as a result.
Wow. There's
a word freaking, and that's with a PH.
Oh, with a PH, yes, I've heard
freaking,
this.
Freaking. Yeah. And that's phone plus freak. Because like that was what he was doing. It was like hacking the phone was called freaking with the PH. Mm. And so that was the birth of hacking.
Really. Amazing. Down to breakfast cereal.
Toy in the breakfast cereal. Yeah.
I wonder if you can still buy the whistle. There must be a collector.
I think they're definitely like a rarity, I think.
And I don't think it still works.
If they're still working AT&T, get your ass together. I also found out that the concept of breakfast being the most important meal of the day came about because of cereal. It was essentially invented by General Foods, company, as a marketing campaign in 1944. Like, they would hand out leaflets in grocery stores to shoppers, like urging them to eat breakfast. Breakfast being the most important meal of the day. Like, guys, it's not.
Bullshit.
Like, no scientist ever said that, right?
Unless you're hungry, and then definitely eat.
Don't
it's
skip
not important. It's just as equally important as all other eating. Breakfast as a concept hasn't been around for most of humanity. Like,
what were people eating when they woke up?
More broadly, I'm trying to say the concept of meal times. Is a cultural invention.
But that's to do with the working day as well. Like weekends.
Yeah.
Are not a thing.
They're arbitrary.
But
Or
nation states. Or property. It's all a lie.
On advertising, I checked this with Rosie, and apparently to film cereal, obviously it's quite hard to make milk look appetizing on the camera.
Yeah.
So you might use PVA glue.
Oh, yes. Gross. I've heard this.
And actually, speaking of cereal on set as well, in the 1940s, a very common way to make fake snow in movies was to paint cornflakes white.
Oh.
Because you needed something much more substantial than
And I guess you could sweep it up and do it again if you had to redo the shot.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah. It was cheap, it was light, it looked really good on camera, but they were really, really noisy underfoot. So when they started needing sound, and
started. How are they painting these? Like, individually?
Labor was cheap.
Yeah. Those are people very proudly. Oh, I made that one, that was mine. I painted that one. Yeah.
Did they do adult films?
How many Christmas themed pornographies have you watched?
I was just setting up the idea I could say porn flakes.
Oh, very nice.
Good, very good.
Okay, that is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
That's right. You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
For more information on iron content, you can visit hemochromatosis.co.uk.
If you're going to visit one website, visit that one. I feel like that's going to be a more interesting one.
Yeah.
And we'll leave you with this. In 1971, General Mills launched a strawberry-flavoured cereal called Frankenberry. Not long after it went on sale, they were forced to reformulate it after the Journal of Pediatrics reported that a red dye used in the recipe was turning children's poo pink.
Oh,
nice.
Oh no.
Oh god.
It turns the milk to not chocolatey.
On that note, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, me, Manu Onrio, and produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.